Hello, everybody. Happy Wednesday, Thursday, whenever you hear this. Welcome back to Aces Up the Sleeve. I'm Patty, co-hosting with the co-managing partner of Pocket Aces Racing, or PAR for the quick reference, Jared Shoemaker. And in our little podcast, we're going to shed light on all things Pocket Aces. We're going to talk about the finer points of syndicate ownership. We're going to discuss what you all, the partners, the listeners, the watchers, have asked us to talk about. And since we are industry participants, we are going to talk about, you know, the industry at large sometimes. But today, we are going to continue on with our guest interview series, and we are joined by Chastity Hedges, and she's the assistant trainer at Margo Farm. And I know you guys have heard us talk about our great love for Margo Farm, how gorgeous it is. And we were like, you know what? Let's pull, you know, one of those key people out there at the farm that helps make everything move. And Chastity, I know you're a busy woman, so thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. I appreciate you guys having me. I'm excited to speak with everyone today.
Well, you know, you've been out there for a while. You've been very instrumental in a number of our horses over the years, and we thought it would be great to have you on and just let people get to know you a little bit, learn a little bit more about you, and just really looking forward to it, because I know you from a professional standpoint, but I don't know a whole lot about you personally, so I'm anxious to find out more myself.
Awesome. Well, I'm happy to share it with you all.
So, you know, in this week's edition, as part of our interview series, we do kind of talk about a little bit. One of our basics is the introduction, the background section. And some of the key questions was always what got you into racing. And then for folks who kind of moved into horse country, what made you decide that Kentucky was the place for you? So why don't we just get started with that first question? What got you into racing?
Okay, sure. Well, in college, I was going for pre-veterinarian. Me and organic chemistry, unfortunately, did not get along. So.
I feel you right there. I hated organic chemistry with an absolute passion.
Yep.
I took that class 3 times, and the best grade I could get in it was a C.
Yep.
So at the time, I was employed at the university quarter horse breeding facility there, just as like a working student, and I got to know
University?
University of Missouri in okay. Columbia. Got to know the professor that was kind of involved with that program, and just kind of started taking all the opportunities there and really enjoyed working with horses as like a career, I guess. I've always had horses growing up, just, you know, out in the backyard, just for pets. Didn't really think of it as much of a career until I started working there and found that I really enjoyed a lot of the aspects there. It was a very small program. They had about 6 mares that they would breed and foal out every year, and then they would use all of those horses in all of the classes in the university programs. They did breeding programs, and they did like a sales and marketing program. So once I was not getting along with organic chemistry, I kind of started turning my viewpoint towards maybe focusing on an equine, more driven career. So I started to minor in agriculture economics as well as equine minor in conjunction with my animal science major. During those classes, it kind of coincided that they were offering this special class that was called an introductory to the thoroughbred industry.
Very
so
cool.
I signed up for that class, which is kind of what introduced me to racing.
Very cool. I have to admit, that's the first time I've heard that, because I know a lot of places are like, there's the whole major is the introduction to the thoroughbred
exactly.
world. Like, so that's cool that they have a class like that. That's like, hey, here's the basics. This could help you potentially figure out if this is a branch you want to pursue. That's cool. I think every like animal science, equine science kind of offering university should have something similar, not just in Kentucky, because there's a lot of kids who have, it feels to me, kind of the same story where they're like, this is the only horse class we had until I got, you know, my internship in Kentucky, because there were so many horse internships, and then boom, I figured out, oh my God, I love thoroughbreds. So that's awesome. That's very cool.
Yeah, it was very cool. We got to take like 2 field trips, I guess you could say. We went to Hot Springs, Arkansas for like a 4-day trip. Went to some racing, talked to a bunch of trainers and people down there. And then we came down here to Lexington, Kentucky for a whole week and kind of did something very similar.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So I find it interesting that Missouri has a program for thoroughbred develop, thoroughbred horses, third train, whatever the, the emphasis on that, because there's no racing in Missouri, right?
No, their program really isn't thoroughbred racing oriented. It was just a special class that the equine, what is the word they, I'm blanking on the name, administer.
Equine studies
Yeah, the
program.
lady just offered, I think she may have only offered it that one time, just randomly.
That might be a program director then, if she was
Yes,
making
maybe it was the
choices.
program director. Yeah, that's her name. Her name is Marcy, but she just offered it that one time, just randomly, and I just got really lucky that I was in like the right place, right time.
So you didn't really grow up around horses, and you were doing like a
No,
school.
just like, pets in the backyard, never really did a whole lot with them. No showing, nothing like that. Just always have enjoyed being around them. And when I chose this as my career, my mom was like, "I knew you would do something with horses." And she finds it actually ironic because I actually had a really bad horse accident when I was 5 years old. It put me in the hospital. So she's always like, I don't know what she feels about me actually working with horses now for my career. But while I was
We're
like,
glad you're working with them now.
me too. I mean, I enjoy it.
So how'd you end up after graduation? How'd you end up in Kentucky and then ultimately at Margo?
Well, I got a job with Anheuser-Busch for like 2 summers, and the farm manager there actually was really, really into thoroughbred racing. Always reading about it in the Thoroughbred Times, which is what introduced me to that. Alongside that, there was the Kentucky Equine Management internship.
That's the Kemi program, the kit.
KMI program,
Yeah.
yes. So I applied for that, and while I was waiting for to hear back from that, I just started sending my resume randomly to any farms I could find online. And luckily, I got into the KMI program. I did my KMI session at Denali Stud with
Yes.
sales prep.
Yep.
And then they hired me on as a regular employee after that to work on the broodmare side. So that's kind of what got me here, got me started. I got to learn a
Cool.
little bit of both sides right there my first year here in Kentucky.
Yeah.
So how long were you at Denali?
I was there for a year.
Okay.
Yeah,
And then to
while I
Margo?
was after Denali, let's see, I kind of worked a lot when I was younger. I even got a part-time job foling out mares at Dixiana alongside my full-time job at Denali.
My goodness, when did you sleep?
I don't know, really.
There's that lovely, healthy saying, sleep when you're dead.
Yes, exactly. I actually after Denali, I got hired on at Judmont Farms.
Oh, that's nice.
I was there for almost 10 years before I came here to Margo.
Hey, I mean,
I did not, that surprises me.
no, yeah, it
I
was
thought
very
you were like 25 or 26 years old.
no. 35 now. Just had my birthday.
Well,
Happy
happy belated
birthday.
birthday.
Well, thank you. I got hired on at Judmont, which I always have wanted to work there. It was like my dream job. I was just a groom for a long time. Kind of got to do a lot of things there. Like Scott was my boss. Anytime I wanted to do something or learn something, they pretty much just let me do it. I did a little bit of everything there. By the time I left there, I had worked in the breeding shed a little bit. I had started doing some like administrative stuff for them. I just kind of got to a point where I just wasn't able to advance there, and I was ready to challenge myself when Dermot called me up and offered me my job here at Margo. So it was a very, very hard decision, and it kind of came down to Scott telling me he was retiring, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna try to take this leap and see what I got in myself.
Oh, it's like you got
Well, that
it.
worked
I was
out.
like,
Yeah,
you got to start
it
somewhere, so you got to
did.
try.
Exactly.
So, what's your typical? It's assistant trainer, yes, but you primarily deal with the young horses, correct?
Yes, I primarily deal with the young horses. Obviously, Dermot has ventured off on his own now. I'm very happy for him. So we've been going through a lot of changes here since pretty much since I've started. So I feel like I haven't had like a consistent year of what exactly my job entails. But I do pretty much cover all the young horses. So my busiest time of the year is September, October. We get a lot of horses in from the September and October yearling sales and for our breaking program here. I pretty much get them shipped in, get them checked over, get them let down from the sale. I like to give them a good week off from the sale before we start breaking them, just to kind of let them just chill and relax and get to sleep in a little bit before they start school, you know?
I think a lot of people don't talk a little bit about the breaking process and what all okay. that entails. I know we've talked a little bit, you know, with some, maybe some other folks, but different farms and different trainers have different ways of going about it. I mean, they're generally, you know, pretty similar, but everybody's got their own specific things, I think, that they do. So just kind of walk us through what, you know, when Nimblefoot and Kidoro got there, had their week off, what was next in store for them when they started school?
So we usually spend probably, I would say, the first week just working on some groundwork stuff, getting them to learn how to use their bodies, move around a person. We introduce them to all the tack, the bridle, the bit. Here at Margo, we do what we call is a flagging procedure, which is basically like a big flag that we wave around their head, touch them all over their body, just to get them used to feelings everywhere, which would kind of like represent like the rider's legs or their hands around them, being the rider sitting on their back. The first week is spent just kind of working them through all of that before we even put a rider on their back. Once we get a rider on their back, we usually start with just some basic walk, trot, canter in the round pen for usually about 3 days, and then we introduce them to our pony horse, Ruger, who I'm sure you guys have definitely probably seen around Absolutely. The farm. Once we get him introduced to him, we start venturing out on little trail rides around the farm, into the arena, where we start working on more like balance and suppleness work in there. Then we start introducing them to small sets of usually 2 or 3 other yearlings with them before we start joining them up with like groups of 5 or 7 horses out there on the track together.
So you got 2 tracks that you primarily mm-hmm. use, the round track and the straight track. Mm-hmm. And I know that the round track kind of, you know, it's got some up and down to it, some different elevations. But just what's the, why 2 tracks?
I don't exactly know why Jim wanted 2 tracks, but I enjoy having the 2 tracks. Because like the babies, that round track is very nice because it has some turns in it. It goes up and down hills. Obviously I don't have a map to show the people listening, but we're able to like kind of do big old figure eights on that track. So I like that because we can change it up for the babies every day. It's not like they're doing the same thing in and out, in and out, in and out. We're able to keep them using their brains, yeah. keep them relaxed out there.
So does it more or less keep them from going like training sour from the constant just doing the same circle, 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 circle? Like, can horses sometimes, can you see it when horses are like, oh my God, another circle? Like, they're just so tired of doing the same thing every single day.
Yes, I would say, in my opinion, yes, that's what I like about it, is I don't see too many of the yearlings get training sour.
Okay, very
cool. I like it too, because like obviously we'll bring the older horses over there sometimes, just when one just needs to slow down a little bit. So I really enjoy having it there for that reason.
It's a really neat little setup.
Mm. It is. It's cool.
I saw recently, as I was kind of cruising the Margo website, there was actually a video of the turf kind of gallops that they use. Mm-hmm. Is that like I know they're not, like, are they used like as often towards training, or is it more like exclusively for horses who really just need turf?
Well, right now we're not using it because
It's
it's
winter.
winter.
Yeah, so
But
seasonal.
when we start breaking the babies, we actually take them back there a lot for trail riding. The year that we, because we just put in that new straight track, that year that we took all that out and we're rebuilding the racetrack, we use that actually a lot for the older horses. Because we could breeze them up that big old hill that we have back there.
Yeah.
So that was really nice for that. We like to take the babies back there at least once, sometimes twice a week, just to give them something different to look at. Obviously, when we get a lot of rain or when it starts getting cold like this, we don't use it quite as often as we do in the summertime.
Yeah. I mean, it's, and I mean, I imagine that's a safety issue. Like, grass gets slippery, and it's a little safer to kind of have it on a more consistent, more predictable footing, I think.
Yes.
All right.
So you've talked a little bit about, you know, training young horses, training older horses. You know, what's the main, you know, obviously once you get to the breaking process and, you know, they've entered more of a, you know, after they've had their break this early winter, which I assume both of ours will probably get, but you know, we don't know that for sure yet. But so the young 2-year-olds, they've had their winter break and then they're getting back at it. What's the main difference other than you know, weekly speed work that you see with the older horses and younger horses, or is there that much difference?
I think obviously I don't have a ton of experience for like getting older horses fit
right.
and ready to go through the racetrack. Actually, this last summer, like in between our transition of getting a new trainer, was my first real experience of building programs for older horses. Ooh. I think what I tried to focus on was just getting the horses like fitness built, so that way they were ready when they got to the trainer to be able to breeze 3/8 easily wherever they went. And so I tried to build my programs on that, just increasing their fitness weekly to see, you know, who was going to actually make it or who needed a little bit more time. Some trainers were wanting horses. Most of the trainers were wanting the 2-year-olds like right after derby time. But a lot of the Woodbine trainers were wanting their horses like April-ish. So those that I knew were probably going to be heading up to Woodbine, I tried to put on a very forward program. We kept them, we switched them to day turnout. We body clipped a few of them, had blankets on a few of them. Where anything that would kind of ship, that I knew would ship after derby, I tried to keep on more of like a relaxed schedule just to keep them, you know, keep their minds a little bit more relaxed, a little bit more downtime, all of that kind of stuff. I start focusing a little bit more on like physical condition. Obviously when they start working a little bit more, galloping more distance, doing those speed works, you have to start feeding them a little bit more. So we weigh a little bit more intensely. I look at the body condition scores of the horses a little more consistently. We start focusing on if we need to put front shoes on some of the horses, fore shoes on some of the horses. I personally don't like to turn out horses as much if they do have fore shoes on, especially with other horses, because they can more prone to injury that way.
Yeah, you don't want one of your horses getting kicked in the head by a horse wearing shoes.
No.
It's not fun.
No. I know I got kicked in the head with a horse wearing shoes once.
Oh,
oh my goodness.
Danger
okay.
for everybody.
That's why we carry liability insurance.
It was only 8 staples. It's fine.
She says, just 8 of them. We're fine.
Oh, gosh. No, it was back at Jedmont once. So,
okay.
Luckily the horse just reared up and struck out and got me. So,
yeah.
Luckily. I like
it. Like it was full on, you know,
yeah.
double barrel.
Jesus. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I promise, listeners, we're not crazy. This is just the horse people doing horse people things.
Yeah, wow. Oh, so, you know, as Patty mentioned earlier, and a lot of our partners have been out to Margaux over the years at open houses or just come out to see the horses. You've worked at, I mean, Judmont, Margo, you've worked at some absolutely beautiful, beautiful places. And I'm sure you visited a lot of other really nice farms here in central Kentucky. So, talk to us a little bit about some of the, what's something that really stands out? Because, maybe a lot of our partners have maybe only been to Margo. So, what's something at Margo that you just don't see at other places? Or what's something maybe you saw at Judmont or at Denali that just, stand out at some of the different farms that you've been to and worked at?
So obviously, Judmont's a private farm, one owner, so all the horses belong to a single guy. And then here at Margo, it's a lot of different owners. So I've been really lucky to get to experience both sides of the industry in that way. Definitely have to operate like a little bit differently in a way. Here at Margo, I got to kind of start learning about like interacting with clients a lot because pretty much every horse has a different owner.
And in some cases, many owners, right?
Exactly. Some cases, many owners. So that's been different. What's really unique about Margo, because I would probably call us, a big training facility. I
Oh,
think
absolutely.
it's very, what I think we have to offer that's very unique is all the turnout that we have, plus like the training programs we offer like together as one. I think turning out horses is so beneficial for them that it just helps their minds, the time that they get on the grass. I personally think that's really, really great for them.
I mean, the time with their head down, nibbling on grass is priceless.
Yes. And I think that's something very unique that Margo has to offer that you don't get to see like just at a racetrack,
So, but never has there really been any discussion, and I don't, maybe this is just Jim's, he doesn't want that, I don't know, but I mean, you guys never do any kind of training that go, training off the farm to race. It's everything goes to the trainer at the track, and versus like, at like a High Point where there's a lot of trainers that, it's a similar type facility with all kinds of turnout, and Fair Hill is the same way in Maryland. You got all this turnout, this big open space, and then they just run right off of the training center. They go to the track and run. But you guys have never done that at Margo, right?
I think my first year here, Dermot did that with one horse, but they
Gotcha.
don't do it very often here. I feel like I've heard like maybe the new trainer John Gleason and Jim maybe toss that up in the air at some point. I think it might be something that like upper management talks often about, but I don't hear too much about it.
They haven't quite
So
pulled the trigger on too
yeah, I
much
don't think they've quite pulled the trigger. I know that they're working on getting like an official like clocking system put in on the track, and so maybe
yet.
that's something that they're like they want need to get that installed first before we can move on to the next step.
Okay.
So it's definitely something I'd have to pick like Richard or John's brains about a little bit
Sure.
more if they've talked about it more, but I have heard it tossed up in the air a couple
Okay.
times.
So hey, like we're I John, we used to send horses to Woodford down in Florida, so we knew John before he came up here. He's an interesting guy, man. He's sharp, isn't he?
Oh yeah, I'm really enjoying working with him. Now that he's kind of settled a little bit more, I get to spend a little bit more time with him. So I'm learning a lot every day. We're kind of switching things up on the farm a little bit more, and I'm kind of do Megan's kind of taking over a little bit more of like the baby training programs, and I'm kind of assisting more with like helping with injuries and all the
Okay.
healthcare stuff. So that's kind of that seems to be the transition that we're going to. And then I just help Megan kind of run sets a little bit more. She's covering all the pretty much like kind of like she did before, like all those initial training days, and then John's starting to be a lot more involved with all the training on the farm as a whole. So he's just kind of really needs some more people to kind of help him on the underneath side now.
So it sounds like you're just kind of getting, you're getting to put your hands into a little more of everything, sounds like.
Yeah, I just kind of float around and do a little bit of everything now. So
What's your favorite part? What do you like doing the best?
I think You know, everyone always asks me this, and this is something too I always advise like younger people coming into the industry is like dip your toes into everything because you never know what you're gonna like. And I feel like I've done very well at that myself. I tried to literally do a little bit of everything before I settled on one thing I like, and I thought I would like training the most. So like over the summer I got to train a lot of horses, and then I went and worked for Bill Mott for about a month, just to kind of see like actual racetrack training. And I think what I really like the most is treating some of the major injuries I get with the babies. It's like I'm leaning towards like I like think I like the medical side a little bit more than the training side, which I didn't expect, to be honest.
Well, if we can just get over that nasty or organic chemistry, you can always
Yeah,
get back to
Rosier.
baseball.
I was like,
Exactly.
it's coming back. It knows.
So even Megan and Callie and I all kind of joke about like I'm the jinx on the farm. I get like all the things that I could possibly imagine. My first year here at Margo, I think I probably got one of everything in any medical book you'd probably open. So I've learned so many things about treating wounds, taking care of sick babies that I feel very confident now. And I feel like each year I have to call the vet like less and less and less. So
Well, as owners, we appreciate that.
yes, I'm sure you do.
So, think about some of the horses that you've worked with over the years on the farm, whether whichever farm. What are some that stand out to you? What are some racing-related memories with those horses that you have? Who are some of your favorite race horses that you've gotten to work with?
Well, I probably have like four that stick out in my head. Arrogate obviously being number one. So
That's
going
fair.
through all
That's
of that
awesome.
was I all the stuff he took me to. And I would never even imagine some of the things like that horse has allowed me to get to experience. So that was a really epic ride, following along with him. And then of course very heartbroken when he
Yeah.
passed away. So pretty devastating, obviously.
Now, were you his groom?
I was not actually. I didn't start working with the 2-year-olds till probably, oh gosh, in my it was really close to the time that he passed away, actually, that I started
Okay.
working with 2-year-olds there. And then I started with fillies, and then I got to do 2-year-old colts at Jedmont when Mandaloon was coming up. So I went through the
Okay.
breaking season with him, got to see him ship off to the track. So that was really fun to see like that he could be successful out there. And now he's obviously a stallion at Jedmont, so that's really exciting as well. And then surprisingly, well, not for you, for me, the Irish Aces sticks out because I remember him being one of the first horses I took care of when I came to Margo. And then, like, he's doing very well out on the track now. So, like, that's really exciting.
Yeah,
Yep.
he just we gave him about 3 weeks off, and he is back in training. He was running the fences and
He was
ready to
bored
go.
every single day.
That's when
So
you know they're ready. Yeah.
he's back down at Palm. He's with Palm Meadows with Brendan, and I'd
Awesome.
say he'll run sometime in January.
That's really cool. The fourth one that sticks out to me is, I know we don't break these horses, but Citizen Bull for the SF partnership. I let all of their horses down from the sale, just give them a good month off before they ship out to Eddie Woods. And so it was really
Okay.
exciting to see him win a Breeders' Cup race. So
Very neat.
very
Good stuff.
cool.
Yeah.
And what about like just not horses that you haven't been affiliated with in some way? Do you have a favorite outside of that?
Well, obviously, when I first started following racing, like Zenyatta and Rachel Alexandria, they were that thing was kind of all happening. So that was really
Yep.
exciting to watch that and follow that along. Some things that like aren't really horse related that I really like seeing are like I think it's like the Godolphin Employee Recognition
Yeah.
Awards. Those are really cool. I think that's something that I wish we could see even more of in the industry. Just like, recognition for some of the grooms and stuff, new people coming into the industry, that kind of all of that good sources. All of the, I didn't expect to see as much support for like trying to get horses into second careers as there actually is in the industry. You know, you have like the Secretariat Center, old friends that horses can retire to, and then you have what's that? I'm blanking on the name of that program.
New Vocations.
New Vocations.
Second Chance.
Retired Racehorse Project.
Retired Racehorse Project. Yes, I've been out to a couple of their events, and those are really cool to watch.
Yeah, I think I think you're right there. I don't think those programs get as much notoriety as they should, because they are so incredibly valuable to the industry, because you know, because so many thoroughbreds don't make it on the racetrack, and even the ones that have made it, you know, maybe they don't have a career in the breeding shed afterwards, and we got to find a place for them. And there's so many wonderful people who just dedicate their lives to the second careers of racehorses, but you never see that on the news. What you see is the shit that goes sideways.
Yes.
It, you know, makes us all look terrible. You don't see the unsung heroes of you know, New Vocations, the Secretariat Center, and all of those places like that.
No.
Well, and to underscore that too, like I imagine a lot of racing people probably don't know this, but the Retired Racehorse Project competition is what I think the first weekend of October. It coincides directly, I think, with Keeneland. It's either the first or second weekend of October. Huh. And I would guarantee you, like, we'll have just it's a pilgrimage into Kentucky for a lot of people to come to Keeneland in April and in October. But I would wager a lot of people don't even know that the Retired Racehorse Project event, that big second career competition for retired thoroughbreds, and now that they've opened up their ranks to retired broodmares, and now they have a broodmare division.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people don't even realize that this competition is also happening at the same time. So it's like, you know, you could have a day at the races at Keeneland, the next day you couldn't go and see what these horses are doing if they don't make it to the breeding shed, or after they've retired from the breeding shed, for a lot of these brood mares. And it's kind of sad, because I try to go out to that competition every year, and it's so cool to just see how good the thoroughbred is at reimagining themselves with a little help from people who believe in them.
No, I definitely agree with all of that. I don't know. I'm not great at figuring out I'm not great at like social media and stuff, so I'm not sure how we advertise that more, but probably through social media, I would imagine.
Yeah. Well, and I think just talking about it, you know, with your friends and your relatives, like my family, I have no racing family, but it's like, if we talk about Zenyatta, every person in that family knows who she is. They know her record. They know everything. And all that's, because that's all I ever did. All I did was talk about it. And now we do the same thing with, like, the second career horses. Like, every time I mention to my mom, oh, yeah, we retired a Pocket Aces horse. And she's like, oh, so what are they going to do now? Where can I follow them? And I'm like, I don't know. They haven't told me yet. So it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, just keep talking about it, you know, and keep telling people and be excited about it, right? Like, it's a good thing that they're going on to something else. Like, just because they didn't make it as a racehorse doesn't mean they're not a good athlete. So that's my soapbox. Exactly right. That's just my soapbox.
Yeah, no.
Exactly. Warrior Prince became quite, you know, he was not super talented as a racehorse, but he's had a very nice show career from what I understand.
Yeah. Oh, his owners occasionally will pop into some of his like race replays on our YouTube, and they're like, oh, it's so weird to see him on the track knowing how him. It's cool. I love all of those old replays on like our Vimeo and stuff. And like, I recently found the walk video for Temple City Terror, like, right after you guys purchased her as a yearling, and I'm like, oh my gosh, we should do a time capsule one day and be like, here's where everybody is. That'd be a lot of fun.
Cool. No, that would be cool.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think that's a big issue, because, you know, even, you know, if you have a track, or they're entered in a race, Equibase lets us know it. Man, if we could come up with some kind of system that they would let us know when our retired horses are doing something, that'd be cool.
Well, I know just recently there was a program released where the horses have been like, they haven't had a workout in I think the minimum standard was like 2 or 3 years or something. Like, they haven't had a workout. They're clearly retired. I know recently the Jockey Club announced that they sent out, like requests to the last notated owners of like, hey, what happened to this horse? So we have some kind of a record of them. I think we're trying, but I definitely think it could be something that as an industry, we could probably lean a little heavier towards.
Maybe. Okay. It's and on YouTube to figure it out.
Yeah. Let's fix it, Chastity. We got this.
I definitely, even though from when I first moved here and started working in the industry, like, I feel like it is like night and day though, almost. Like, there is a lot more recognition, and I am seeing a lot more stuff, whether that's because I'm actually in the industry now and I don't know what like normal public, what they see. I don't know.
And you make a good point. Like, you shouldn't have to be in the industry to know what the efforts are, you know, like, mm-hmm. we should be able to just talk about something. And I'm not saying it be a household name, but have people, you know, even vaguely be like, oh, okay, I've heard of programs like that, and at least have people understand and not have it be a situation where you have to be in the industry to know what programs are happening, right?
Like, yeah, no,
that's,
exactly.
That's a weird thing for me. And that's a very interesting point you made. That's a very interesting point. Like, you know better now because you're here, mm-hmm. but, like, beforehand, it was kind of, like, a little ambiguous kind of. Exactly. Is what I'm hearing. So that's interesting. It's very interesting. So, Jared, do I steal your question, or are you going to ask? Because I see you. I think he's frozen. Jared might be gone. Like, I just see him staring blankly into the camera on my screen.
Me too.
Oh, boy. Okay.
He looks very serious, though.
He's loading. Okay, so I will start the question, then if he loads back in, I'll let him finish it. So usually, one of the questions he asks all of the guests at the end of kind of our interview, when we kind of start wrapping the episode up, is you are queen for a day of North American racing. What kind of change, and it doesn't have to be anything that we've talked about here, but what kind of change, if you could, you know, make one declaration, what would you change about North American racing?
I'm back.
Oh, hello. Well, we just got to the end of your question, Jared, so I had to kind of steal your thunder here.
Not sure what happened there.
We had a good laugh.
Yeah, it was funny. Okay, so if I were queen of the day for North American racing, two major things popped to my mind, but I think I would like to see more of, like, an educational base on, well, I think about on the farm, but also maybe on the racetrack as well. Because I feel like if we had a stronger representation of people to teach new people coming into the industry, I think we would be able to keep, like, people in it longer. So, I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, so... like education in the hopes of improving the retention rate. So it's not, so it's not so much they get thrown to the wolves and they don't know what to expect, but they've been taught, okay, here's some of the basics here. Let me explain why we do what we do.
Why.
Yeah.
Yes.
And kind of not leave them to their own devices. That's yes. interesting. See, that's one of the first, I think, isn't that one of the first times we've gotten that response, Jared? Cause we have a lot of really good ones.
And I totally understand. You know, coming out of corporate America like I did, I mean, you know, my goodness, my training would be 5-6 weeks, and I got trained on everything, and then there was continuing education constantly.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
And I can see in a farm setting where it's just like, oh my goodness, we've got a whole lot of stuff we got to get done every day, mm-hmm. and into the evenings, and, you know, starting early in the morning, that I could see how, you know, training or educational opportunities would get shunted to the side.
It does, yes. So I always tell myself that when I got into a management position like this, like, I never wanted to forget where I started or where I came from. And so I try very hard to always just remember my employees and be like, okay, we need to, just the other day, a couple weeks ago, we practiced loading babies on the trailer. And I was like, okay, I want to take this opportunity to teach some of my greener employees how to actually get a horse to train to load on a trailer, you know, not just shove them on a trailer, you know, but actually teach them to load.
Yeah.
So we took a good chunk of the afternoon, and I taught a lot of people how to do that. And I just always want to spend, I wish I could see that more at other places also.
Well, and I imagine it's also it's also a question of safety, because, mm-hmm. you know, one of the things you mentioned, loading, I think people underestimate sometimes. Everybody says, oh, they're forcing that horse. No. If a exactly. horse really does not want to load, you have a better chance of moving a mountain than you have moving a horse who does yes. not want to load. Sorry,
Jim. Yeah, I think people that haven't been around it and haven't ever witnessed a horse that's reluctant to get on a van have no idea what you're dealing with there.
Yeah, it can be dangerous, not just for the person, but for the horse too, obviously.
I know of someone that had a young horse that they were really excited about, and they were trying to get the thing on the van, and he was halfway up the ramp, and he reared up and came back over and landed on his head and cracked his skull, and that was it.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so it is very, very dangerous for horse and personnel that are dealing with it. It is a good on you for
taking the time.
Try to do it the right way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I try to do that as often as I can. I call them educational sessions, whether my employees like them or not. I don't know, but
I feel like they'll thank you in the long run when they're in a situation and stuff is going sideways and they're prepared for sideways. I suspect more than a couple people might, you know, text you one day in the future, be like, hey, this is what happened. And, big thanks for teaching me how to respond there.
Right. Yeah.
So what's the second thing you'd like to change?
I kind of already mentioned it before, you know, but just like, you know, more recognition for grooms or people, you know, at the bottom. Like, I feel like sometimes it gets just, you know, forgotten a little bit sometimes, like how, like, we wouldn't be able to have this industry without, you know, people that come in early in the mornings or working out in the 20-degree weather and making sure the horses are taken care of. Yep.
It's Absolutely. 24 degrees and nice and windy in Kentucky today, and every single one of those grooms went to work.
Yes, they did.
Right. Cool. Chassie, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your experience with us and some insights. And, you know, I can't tell you how much Mark and I and Addie and the rest of the partners of Pocket Aces Racing, how much we appreciate all you and your coworkers out there, Margo, do. And, you know, just thanks for everything and keep up the great work.
Absolutely. I appreciate you guys having me on. This is my first podcast. So.
Well, you did great.
Hey, first of many.
You did Good. Great.
Well, thank you guys. And obviously, like, we love having you guys as clients. And I always enjoy the open house that you guys have when you come out, and look forward to our continued working relationship.
Well, April 12th, you can go ahead and put it down on your calendar.
Yep. Okay.
Spring open house.
Woohoo!
That's one of the features.
Saturday, April 12th.
Yep.
The open house.
Awesome. So love it.
I'm excited. Margo's going to be beautiful. It's going to be fantastic.
Yes, and hopefully warmer than now.
Ideally, that would be lovely.
It definitely can't be colder.
No. Not
though I have seen it snow so hard in April that you can't see the back, you know, from the grandstand at Keeneland.
Yeah.
You see
yep.
the backstretch.
I think I was there one day when it was snowing sideways, and they were like, yeah, it's snowing at Keeneland right now. And everyone's like, why? It's April.
Yep, it happens.
That's Kentucky right, weather, y'all.
Before we start talking about all the joys of Kentucky weather, Patty, take us home.
Yep, absolutely. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in this week. We appreciate everybody's support, whether you've been a watcher, a listener. You guys show up every week, and we greatly appreciate you. Make sure that you're subscribed to any of the channels that you're going to find the audio podcast on, which is going to be our Castos. Make sure also that you are following our social media pages. We are kind of everywhere. We're trying. We're doing Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on Instagram, we're on Threads. We've seen a lot of you on Threads, so we're super happy you guys have found us. We're under Pocket Aces Racing. Make sure that you're also subscribed to our YouTube channel for when our video features, our occasional video interviews go live, and make sure you hit the bell to get that notification for when they do start going up. But other than that, you know, so tell everybody, have a happy Wednesday, have a happy Thursday, Friday, whenever you listen to this. Make good choices. And podcast is out.